Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're back with RCR Greenwashed with Jaspreet and Don. And over the last 10 years, there's been a lot of toing and froing in our province about our regional land and water plan. And by golly, it's cost a lot of money and it's cost a lot of time, of voluntary time, legal time, you name it. It's just a massive burden on the community. But just the other day, there was a Court of Appeal decision that came out that pretty much, the way I read it, makes farming impossible in the region without consent. And even then, why wouldn't bother sort of it to bother farming or even getting a consent? That's my personal view. But to give us a 101 on all this, we have Bernadette Hunt, spokesman for Federated Farmers Southland. She is an executive member of Federated Farmers Southland, to give us the 101. Welcome, Bernadette. No days off in this game, is there?
No, this water and land plan is the gift that keeps on giving. It was first kicking off when I first began my time with Federated Farmers. And in fact, it was one of my reasons for saying, actually, I'd like to get more involved. I want to make sure we know what's going on here. And I didn't dream that 10 years later, we would still be dealing with it. But anyway, here we are. Yeah, it's been a long and convoluted process, which, you know, started back 10 years ago with some pre-consultation before there was anything formal, and then a plan was written and notified. Lots of people made submissions to that plan. Those submissions were reviewed. People were heard by a hearing panel who put out another version of the plan based on all of the things that they'd heard and what they thought was the right outcomes. And then from there, lots of that new version of the plan was appealed because there was a lot in there that many parties still didn't think was workable. And there was a big long list of people that appealed aspects of the plan, including many individual farmers. And over the years of this plan going round and round in circles through court processes, those people have mostly dropped off because it just got too expensive and too ridiculous and too onerous for most people to be able to stay involved with. But Federated Farmers has stayed throughout at huge expense. And we are now in the final throes of it. Most of the plan has been decided by the Environment Court and is now operative. But there's a few things that remained outstanding. One of those was Rule 24, which is about incidental discharges from farming. And the judgment that the Environment Court judge made on that was a judgment that we couldn't sit with. And actually, nationally, Federated Farmers decided they couldn't sit with because it was immensely precedent-setting. So nationally, Federated Farmers took a High Court appeal about that, and other parties did as well. Other parties were on that appeal too. I'll explain what it all means in just a minute, but that High Court appeal failed. And then Environment Southland actually took that appeal to the Court of Appeals to question it further. And that last week, the judgment was passed that had also failed. So that means the Environment Court judge's decision stands, and we're left with a really complicated rule, which I'll explain. So that means all judicial processes are now exhausted. The only way to address this is through government legislation. So that's kind of the process. Do you want me to go now into
Could I just ask the very basic question? How come in 2024, Resource Management Act enacted in 1991, I think we're on our second regional land and water plan, how come it's taken till now to get to this point? Why is it that, say, in 1991, clarity wasn't there to the point where the legal profession and all the NGOs that are on the other side of the fence perhaps have been able to milk it for so long to get to this point? There's something seriously wrong with the RMA, isn't there?
The RMA is an absolute dog's breakfast. And part of that is because it was written 30 years ago with a series of intent. I mean, its original intent was to enable resource use. And so it was written with a series of intent, but over 30-something years, you know, there's been various interpretations of that. Every time something about it comes back to the courts, a judge makes an interpretation and passes judgment based on that. And then that new interpretation sets a precedent that the next decision is based on. And then the next decision is based on that. And sometimes that might create something perverse. So a legislation change happens to the RMA to fix that interpretation. So, you know, there's been all these piecemeal changes made over time and all these little different interpretations that set new precedents, and it's just become this beast that you have to have years of qualifications at university to even get your head around. But yeah, it's just got so far away from the enabling piece of legislation it was meant to be, and it's now the polar opposite. It's actually a weapon that's used by some parties to disable use of resources.
Three decades in the making, and this is where we are. And as you say, each time you change something, it becomes case law. So suddenly a whole lot of changes cascade further. And this is pretty much the way I look at it, the RMA Bernadette. It's giving these activist organizations a fabulous loophole that, that's a full-time job and all farmers are left doing, and even townsfolk who get caught up in all of this is defending themselves at sometimes at a huge mental, financial, emotional cost. It is just not fair. And yet this was supposed to enable efficient management of our resources.
Absolutely.
Well, that's like winning lotto every day in the last 30 years for the legal profession and the planners. It has been each day. There's been a, it's like they're now on Powerball on steroids.
And look, honestly, it's my first involvement in anything like this. I'm a farmer. I'm no planner or legal person, and I've learned more than I ever hoped to know about this stuff along these last 10 years. But it has struck me how unjust the justice system is when it comes to this stuff, because General Joe Bloggs no longer had ability to be involved. The Southland Water and Land Plan was originally written by Southland for Southland, and Southland now has very little say in the outcomes that are going to define our future. And the whole process has just seemed so unjust because people couldn't stay involved because it came down to who had the most money.
I remember I did put a submission into it, perhaps 2015, 16, and you're right, I got burned off. I got treated with derision when I stood up for property rights. Pretty fundamental. You would have thought I got put it back in the box. So you do get worn down. So I take my hat off to you and your Federated Farmers team. They really do. They have stayed staunch on this, and vitally so. So what does the ramifications of this? We're all farming. I farm, you farm. Are we going to be able to farm anything like we did in the past if this carries on?
Certainly not if this rule didn't get changed. No, we won't. And no, I think farming is forever changed by the processes that have gone on through this plan and through others of similar time period. But we're still fighting for some common sense. This particular rule, though, is massively consequential and precedent setting for the whole country, for land use across the whole country. And that's why this is such a big deal. So Rule 24 in the Water and Land Plan is a rule that only affects farming in Southland. And it's about the incidental discharges from farming into waterways. So where contaminants may end up entering waterways across farmland, that's a permitted activity under Rule 24. Under the way Rule 24 was drafted or was written, that would be permitted. So things, if you, for example, have spread fertilizer on your land, or cows have urinated on your land, the rain falls, picks up those things and transports them to a waterway, that's considered permitted, logically, because how are you meant to stop that? There is a rule, though, as in the RMA, Section 70 prevents discharges to waterways where they may have a negative, where they cause conspicuous change to the waterway beyond a minimal amount, or where they may have an impact on aquatic life. So Section 70 prohibits discharge to waterways under those situations, but it's always been assumed to apply only to what's called point source discharges. So that's where water is dis or where things are discharged into a waterway through a pipe, usually. So Section 70 has always been assumed to only apply to discharges, i.e., through a pipe.
Say, for example, a particular effluent system breaks down. There is something that happens there. You're referring
Or,
to,
for example, Alliance at Matara discharge into a waterway through a pipe. It's called a point source discharge. Where a waterway flows over land and enters water anywhere else, that's a diffuse discharge. And it's always been assumed that Section 70 did not apply to that. And that's what Rule 24 is assuming, that where water flows all over the place over land and gets to water, Rule 24 says that that's permitted. Fish and Game appealed that rule on the basis that they were saying Section 70, or no, they were saying because all of the waterways, and this is another issue that's come out of the Environment Court, all of the waterways in Southland were considered degraded by one measure or another. Therefore, any additional discharge into those waterways would be considered to cause issues for aquatic life, further degradation to aquatic life. So Fish and Game questioned the ability of that rule to be legal. They're basically saying Rule 24 is illegal. You can't have it. That was the point of their appeal. And the Environment Court judge agreed with them on the basis that Section 70 isn't specific to point source discharges.
It applies to
It
all
applies to all.
discharges. So
So that,
if you
sorry.
look at this year, sorry, Southland, the amount of rain we've had, and it's all flowing down into drains and waterways. So essentially, you are supposed to somehow dam that to be
Yeah.
able to legally farm in this province.
Maybe, yeah, it's not allowed to discharge to waterways anyway. Yeah,
Wonderful.
it's crazy. It's absolutely bonkers. So yeah, and just touching on that degraded waterways thing. So this was another process that happened in the Environment Court proceedings where they had to determine what degraded meant. And so under David Parker's essential freshwater legislation that came out in the last government, the bar was lifted quite significantly on what was considered to be a waterway that was okay, that was acceptable in terms of environmental quality indicators. The bar got lifted. And when Southland waterways were tested by a bunch of expert witnesses in the court processes to determine whether or not they met that bar, the answer was no, according to these experts and according to the joint witness statement. So therefore, all of Southland's waterways are considered to be degraded because they don't meet one or more of the indicators. Therefore, aquatic life is said to be detrimentally affected. Therefore, anything that you may do to further cause damage to that waterway or degradation to that waterway is, they're saying, cannot be permitted. And so it's all on. So there's a whole convoluted series of decisions that have led to this point. But at the end of the day, what it means is that water that carries nutrients into waterways over land or over farmland in Southland cannot be permitted according to this decision. And the other thing that hasn't been talked about very much, there is another provision in the RMA, I think it might be 106 or something like that, that says that that basically would stop these resource consents, even if you did want to apply for one, and who would, that they wouldn't be able to be granted anyway. So you have to apply for a consent to allow for rainwater to run into waterways, but if you apply for a consent, there's another provision in the RMA that would prevent you getting it.
So one anomaly in all this discussion seems to be that, and if I picked you up correctly, the standards for water quality have changed while the water and land plan was being formulated and appealed and revised. How does that fare? You have a different standard midway through a process. How does that work? Who did that? Who was the architect of that nonsense?
That's a very good question, actually. You probably have to ask somebody with more degrees than me that question. I'm not really sure. These things, but it is very perverse that you start with one set of rules and then all criteria that you're trying to meet. But I guess that's what happens when these processes take so long.
Well, clearly the last government had some vexatious behavior carrying on around environment. The minister of the time seemed to be a little a lot in your face about this stuff. But and I'm going to say that I'm aware that Federated Farmers Southland paid a lot of money to get a state and trend of the water around the region in about 2012, 13, and it showed, but for a couple of spots, the state and trend in water quality in Southland was either holding or improving. Very few spots did it show anything that was of a major worry. And moreover, if you took out the outliers that were in these data sets, the state and trend was very good. Now, internationally, we're told we have either we're in the top four water quality countries or countries in the world for water quality. I don't know who makes that ruling or that understanding, but you'd think, having traveled the world, I would think we're a pretty good spot. Why do we continually put ourselves down all the time? And it's right we have good water quality. I'm not denying we should have good water. Why do you think there's so many people find it a feeding frenzy to upset farming, basically, or upset industry?
Yeah, it seems that that's become a bit of a no-no to do anything productive. Hey, that's and I guess that's where we've headed with
Well,
the outcomes of this.
it breaks your spirit, doesn't it? That's my point. I mean, I'm not farming actively now, but it would break it when I was. This stuff breaks your spirit. slowly but and surely it just wears you down. If you're at the coal face like you are, I mean, there's plenty of farmers who just don't get involved in this because they know it would eat them up. So I take my hat off to you and your colleagues that are active on it. So what's your next moves, do you think? Are you waiting for the minister for the environment and the government effectively to do some changes quickly? And we've got the RMA changes coming up. Is that where it's all going to happen, you think?
It's going to have to. So we know that they're completely rewriting the RMA, but we can't wait that long because this decision has been made, and it would take a wee while for the decision to play itself through the processes to actually start to be enacted. But how do you begin to enact this? You can't. You actually can't. So we've written to the ministers, and so has Environment Southland, requesting that Section 70 of the RMA gets urgently changed. Basically, to clarify the assumption that had always been made that that applied to point source discharges. Now, again, my farming knowledge doesn't go close to being able to communicate the exact detail that we've requested from ministers. Far cleverer people are figuring that out. But yeah, long and short of it is we're aiming for the RMA to be clarified so that this isn't actually an issue anymore. So my strong message to farmers on this is, don't panic. Don't worry about it. It's got to get sorted out because the government can't afford to not sort it out. Because this, yes, this is a rule on Southland farming, but as we've talked about, it sets a precedent for farming all over the country. But not only that, if this is how it applies to farming land, why wouldn't it apply to roads, to building sites, to towns, to,
Any land
the
use.
ridiculous outcome of this is that it's got to play out to all land uses, and it can't. So they will have to fix the RMA to stop it.
Bernard, I've read the press release from Federated Farmers, and when Jason Herrick has said, "We are fed up with Southland Fish and Game's persistent anti-farming rhetoric and their opposition to everything we do. We've tried our best to maintain our relationship with them, but they've washed that relationship away down the Matara River." And this brings me to the Orange Ribbon campaign that Southland Feds have begun. Could you talk more about that?
So, there's that far more boring thing that we're doing with trying to work the government to fix it. But actually, you talked about the constant attacks on farming and dragging your spirits down and all of that kind of stuff. We have been butting heads with Fish and Game for a long, long time on a huge number of parts of the Southland Water and Land Plan, and on a number of other things as well, and in particular, gravel management in Southland's waterways and the Waituna Lagoon situation. Really recently, well, it's been going on for a long time, but it reared its head again very recently. There's a number of things, and for us, this has just been the last straw, and we've just decided, actually, how long do we have to keep dealing with this kind of deliberate obstruction to anything productive? So yeah, we've launched a campaign against Fish and Game. We're asking people to boycott Southland Fish and Game because it is in particular Southland Fish and Game that are incredibly obstructive. The broader organisation has been very difficult to deal with over a long period of time, but at the top levels and in other parts of the country, that has changed drastically in more recent times. And there's good working relationships being established in other parts of the country, but we just can't make headway down here. So this is very much an action in Southland, but supported by our national board and supported by other parts of the country as well, because they can see what we're dealing with down here. So we're asking farmers that have access, Fish and Game access signs for public access to waterways on their gates to remove those and replace them with an orange ribbon to indicate that they're part of this campaign. We're asking people to refrain from purchasing fishing licenses, in particular from purchasing fishing licenses from Southland Fish and Game. There is a way to still be able to fish legally without supporting Southland Fish and Game if you want to do that, even in Southland. We're asking anybody who is in support of this campaign to fly orange on their roadside gates. I've got one on my car. I've got an orange ribbon on my car. Wherever you want to show that you support this campaign, because Southland Fish and Game would quite happily completely shut down the productive economy in Southland, and that's hugely significant. And as we've seen, this actually has flow-on effects far beyond Southland too.
And you think I'm looking at some of the fish and game players here on my internet as I talk to you, and I think these people are going to be over 65 one day and look for a pension, maybe. Why should they have one if they're going to be so obstructive to the earning capacity of the country? And I'm not, again, I have to reiterate, no one wants to see the environment wantonly degraded, but if you go around the province, you don't see anyone wantonly degrading the environment. It's business as usual, as it's been for a long time, with a whole lot better, knowledge amongst the farming fraternity than there ever has been. And it's still not good enough. But these people keep coming at you. Sure, you buy, can't stop people being a member of an organization. But we've got an economy, and Southland's economy is a vital part of the New Zealand cog. What, 2% of our population? I think we put out 14% of the national exports, including Tiwai, the aluminium smelter, where we should be a beacon of hope and prosperity for the country. But these people, yeah, they've got something in them that's different to what you and I have, I think.
Yeah,
So
you're right. And I think we've, that's part of the problem is there's been massive improvements made in farming
yes.
practice, along with education. Back in, I think it was 2014, there was a Telford report about the impacts of winter grazing on waterways, and that led to some massive changes to the way winter grazing practices are undertaken. There's no recognition of the work that's been done to change and improve. It's just never enough. It doesn't matter how far we go, it's never enough. And the other thing is, a lot of fishing access and things like that, it's goodwill of farmers. And we're just frustrated. There's no goodwill comes back the other way. So this is very much, us pushing back hard on fish and game who just are giving nothing, and there's just no recognition. We have had a number of professional fishing guides reach out to us, other people whose livelihoods in Southland are largely supported by fishing guides and fishing people in Southland at this time of year. By and large, they're incredibly supportive of what we're doing because they can understand the impact. And we don't want this to harm other people. We really, really don't. This is about fish and game. So, just encourage those people that are concerned about it to keep reaching out to us because there are ways around most things. It's fish and game that we want this to hurt, not everybody else. And as I said, nobody has to fish illegally. If you really want to go fishing in Southland, you can still go online and get a fishing license. Just affiliate that to a different region, preferably one of the regions that actually really, really strongly supports farming. They tend to be further north in the country. So just as a bit of a hint. But we just ask you not to give that membership to Fish and Game Southland.
So just a question to the side of all that. I mean, has Fish and Game Southland said that the fishing quality in Southland Rivers is poor? Have those fishing guides, sorry, that you just mentioned, not Fish and Game, the fishing guides that you've talked about, have they talked about the fishing in the Southland Rivers being poor and the fish health being poor? Have they ever said that?
I don't. I've not heard
No,
it. I must
I
admit.
haven't
I've
either.
got friends and fam. I mean, I'm not personally that into fishing. Other than occasionally the kids go throw a rod in a river, but no, I've got family and friends that do, and no, I haven't heard that. But then I'm not. Don't know
Right.
if I would.
Okay. All right. It was just a yes, an off to the side question. Hey, so we'll wind up soon, but let's talk about the Waitona Lagoon. Now, that lagoon has been in national headlines for close to 15, 20 years. There's been major amounts of money spent battering the sides of the creeks in and putting rocks in and all sorts of things to try and stop sediment flow into the lagoon. But still, the lagoon does what lagoons do when you're on the estuarine or the coast. It closes off. But this year, it and the opening of that lagoon, which happened by spade and shovel 50 years ago, perhaps 70 years ago, now gets it's so hard to get opened. There's such a convoluted process. And I saw the graphs where that lagoon went to 2.5 meters above its normal height before anything was done. The access roads were swamped. The new bridge that the Southland District Council raised to try and be above it all was underwater. The farmland around there was seriously underwater. And of course, we've had the serious rain we've had in recent weeks. Thankfully, it's been opened. Do you think there's going to be some goodwill based on what you're doing now with Fish and Game and DOC and the Ministry for the Environment and Environment South to actually have a common sense opening regime? let's say 500 mils above, 900 mils above normal, let it go or something. I don't know what it would be, but 2.5 meters is outrageous when you know how low-lying the land around that area is.
That is outrageous. And you'd like to think so, but I don't think that actually has come from this. I think it was opened this time under Environment Southland using emergency powers. So it wasn't out of any cooperative process that common sense prevailed by any stretch. It was last resort type stuff, as it was the prior time. I'm pretty sure, I mean, I'm no expert on the Waituna Lagoon either, but the prior time, there was massive environmental issue that caused it to be open, and it had to get almost beyond a point of no return before it was able to open. It's nuts. So I don't know what it's going to take. I really don't. And look, I would love to think that this kind of action might see a turnaround in fish and game. I don't know. I actually suspect that for certain individuals, there it'll actually cause them to dig their heels in more. So I don't know what it's going to take to make a change. I really don't. But we've kind of run out of other options, so we're trying this. Yeah, it's incredible. And the gravel buildup in rivers in Southland is much the same. It is so obvious to everybody else that the continuing buildup of gravel is actually causing environmental destruction, let alone infrastructure destruction. When there's issues with sediment in all of our tidal estuaries, yet and we're expected on farm to do everything we can to mitigate sediment runoff, and rightly so. We should be doing everything we can to prevent it. But the amount of sediment that comes off most farms is minute compared to the amount of sediment that goes into rivers by the banks being carved out every time there's a big rain event. And those rain events have more and more effect the more of the gravel buildup happens. Yet fish and game obstruct every effort to maintain rivers the way they used to be maintained to avoid this kind of stuff. It beggars belief.
It's far easier to blame it all on climate change, isn't it? Just conveniently everything there, and we're not going to do anything practical and make life as hard as possible for everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
But
hopefully we get some change. Hopefully people get frustrated enough. And if this financially hurts fish and game in Southland, where it really, really matters the most, at the very least, they'll have less money to spend on us in court, against us in court. That's actually where it really comes down to. I really have a problem with putting money into an organisation that then uses that money against us. So that's what's at the nub of it, really.
Well, it absolutely, it's the nub of it, but it's happening to us all the time. I mean, we've funded this massive rate increases over all local authorities around the country, and often that money is being used against the very people that they get to pay the bills for themselves. So, hey, Bernadette, all the best to you and your executive for the weeks and months ahead, because this clearly won't go away. I just wished that we could enjoy spring in the south and this stuff wasn't on our neck all the time. So, yeah, all power to your arm. Thank you for coming back on RCR Greenwash today, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much for having me. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.